Hey, welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Delighted, as always, to have you with us here on Wednesday, every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Got an unusually good show today. I'm really proud of our guests. We're going to be talking about long-term care insurance and how to have a happy retirement. And these are all ideas and things that can save you an awful lot of money in retirement and maybe save you from bankruptcy. And we're going to dispel a lot of myths today about a lot of things that are happening in the retirement world. But my guests are Paul Fort. He is the CEO of Long-Term Care Partners, and they run the Federal Health Long-Term Care Insurance Program. We're going to take a look at that. And also Stan Hendon, who is a longtime colleague of mine. We were at the Washington Post together for many, many years. Stan retired, and he's written a book about how to retire happy, the 12 most important decisions you make before you retire. It's been a bestseller on both the Washington Post and the New York Times book list, so that's going to be fun. Stan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mike.
And I remember when you left the Post, your first column as a retiree, I thought was one of your best, because you said, I made a lot of mistakes.
I did.
Yeah. What were some of those?
Well, I did not take the time to do my homework on a number of issues. One of those important issues was my pension, because, as you know, when you retire and you have some pension decisions to make, you can take a spousal benefit of varying degrees, or you can take the money as a single annuity just for yourself, which means that you would then leave nothing for your spouse. For various reasons, that's the decision we made, from take the single annuity. But I always regretted that, because by the time I retired and had more time to do the arithmetic, I figured out that my wife would be a lot worse off if that were the case, then otherwise. So that was a decision I made. In fact, we made it together, but I still thought it was a mistake. The mistake basically was not doing my homework and figuring out in advance what was the right way to go.
Well, that's where that old saying, I guess, the cobbler's children have no shoes. You know, you're an expert in something like that, but you don't do it for yourself. And I believe I remember, too, from that column, that you said you had been more conservative in your investments than you wish you had been.
Yeah, I made another mistake, which was to take my 401k money and to put it in a money market fund for a number of years, just forgetting about it, basically, when it could have earned a great deal more money if I had it invested in the proper way.
Right. Well, at that time, and I remember we were all doing it at the Post, but the markets were booming, and we were figuring whether we were going to buy a beach house in Rehoboth or Nag's Head and that sort of thing, but it was looking
very good. Yeah, I figured that mistake cost me about $70,000 in retirement money.
Yeah, sure.
So I didn't make that mistake again.
Yeah, but this is why we live and learn. And also, we're talking about long-term care insurance, how important it is, and that was the subject of my column today, the Federal Report, about long-term care insurance and how little people know about it. And in researching this, I'd known it, but I double checked. The vast majority of people who declare bankruptcy in the United States, it's because of medical or hospital bills, and the vast majority of those people have health insurance. So it's not like they're indigent; they don't have insurance, they don't have enough, or they don't have the right kind. Which brings us to long-term care insurance, and that's one of those things. A lot of people don't even want to talk about it, because the thought that, you know, we're going to be old and feeble and need care, dressing and bathing and toileting, it's not a fun prospect. But it can also happen to people in their 30s, and the poster boy for that, if you will, is Christopher Reeves, Superman. You know,
yes, true.
The prime of life, rich guy. Beautiful wife, wonderful kids. I mean, everything going for him. An accident with a horse, an equestrian accident, and he was crippled for life. He had a lot more money than most of us, and yet I believe he still died virtually penniless. The estate was used up by all of this long-term care. And you had a personal experience, or having a personal experience with your wife, correct?
That's true. My wife, Sarah, to whom I've been married for 60 years this week, a few years ago, began to develop signs of dementia and eventually was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And very fortunately, a few years ago, the Washington Post offered its employees a group policy, long-term care policy, through the CNA insurance company. And luckily, I bought the policies for Sarah and for myself and, you know, continued to pay on them for many years. And then when she developed Alzheimer's, the insurance kicked in, and it's been a great help. So long-term care insurance generally is considered expensive and can be expensive and even out of reach for some people. But the fact is, if you've got it and you need it, it's a great thing to have.
Well, the way I look at it, and maybe I'm a half full as opposed to glass half empty type guy, is this is I have the same plan you do, the Washington Post plan. And I hope and pray that every penny of the premiums I pay are wasted, that I never see any benefit from them, that I don't need them. But I got it early on. I was maybe early 50s, which is considered by some people too early. But I'm glad I did it. I've paid into it for a long time, happily paid into it. The premiums have not gone up. The business has changed dramatically, and a number of companies that were in the long-term care insurance business have gone out of it because their costs are so heavy. So it is so such a difficult thing to do. And I think it's one of those you don't want to talk about. It's like fire insurance. Nobody buys fire insurance unless you're a pyromaniac or a crook and says, I hope my house burns down. You know, mm-hmm. But that's why they call it insurance.
Exactly. And it's, as I say, a great thing to have if you need it.
Yeah. Paul, you are CEO of Long-Term Care Partners, and you guys have been running the federal long-term care program. Is this your 10th year?
It's our 11th, Mike.
11th year. Okay, going into it. How many people in the government have your program, the federal program?
270,000.
And how many should have it?
Well, I'd like to see that number at least twice as much. You always have to figure that with a voluntary program in which the enrollee pays 100% of the cost, that you're going to get less than 100% participation.
Yeah.
But I think it could be much greater. I think for some of the reasons you've just cited, people are reluctant to either think about long-term care, or they think perhaps it won't happen to them. Or they have not looked carefully at the actual costs of care in the area, and so they imagine that the insurance is expensive. When in fact, if they looked at the actual costs, they would see it as an economic decision.
Well, and it's deductible from your taxes, isn't it? Aren't there premiums?
It is. If you have you have to do it as part of your itemized health care expenses. If your expenses exceed 7.5% of your gross income, you can take it.
And that can certainly happen to people with heavy bills. I mentioned in the column this morning the federal report, but I think it's painful at times, but I think a personal experience is useful. My mother was a government worker, mm-hmm. Long time, HUD, Social Security, U.S. Information Agency. She retired from the government early. And she had worked in the private sector, so she was entitled to Social Security. She got a federal annuity pension, and she reluctantly bought long-term care insurance. I urged her to do it, and being the only son, naturally, it was like role reversal. She did not like to take my advice, but she did. She bought it. Did not buy the federal program, but she got a good one. And I thought it was a gift to her. I thought I was doing her a favor, even though she was paying for the premiums. But been healthy all her life, a lifetime walker. I don't think she got a driver's license until she was 31. I had the first car in the family. And but very healthy habits for the most part. And so the same thing. She was hit with dementia, later diagnosed as Alzheimer's. And from being this robust, you know, jolly, happy, walk everywhere, do everything person, she eventually became, I saw her tied to the bed as they strapped things in. But between her Social Security, her federal annuity and the long-term care insurance. I was the only child, but all of the financial things that would have fallen on me, she took care of. She took up the slack. My children were a great help at that time, but it made all the difference. And I realized that the gift was not to her; it was to me and to the family. And the help it gave us and the dignity it gave her. She was in none of those facilities are fun, but she was in a very fine first class place, made possible by her own foresight.
Yes, Mike, she was wise to buy it, and you were wise to urge her to do so. We regret that so many people don't think that way, and you did this a number of years ago when long-term care insurance was less well-known. Of course, Stan made the decision quite a few years ago. Stan, you report in your book that you were only 64 and your wife was 62 when she first purchased the coverage. So that was quite a while ago, and obviously it's been very helpful to you because she is getting, if I remember, $130 a day today under the CNA policy at a cost of about $1,700 a year. Of course, now she enjoys waiver of premium because she's in care. But that must have been a great relief to you because here you are, healthy and active and busy, and your savings are not being depleted.
Steve, let me interrupt here. We need to take a short break, but Stan, if we can hold that thought, come back about the value of long-term care insurance. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. We're talking about something, a very important subject, not a fun subject, long-term care insurance, but something that you probably really should not be without, regardless of your age and your family status. My guests are Stan Hendon. He's author of the book, How to Retire Happy, the 12 most important decisions you must make before you retire, and Paul Fort, who is the CEO of Long-Term Care Partners, and they manage the federal long-term care insurance program, which has been sort of a model for the nation in many ways. And you're in your going into your 11th year, and you have there 225,000.
270,000.
70,000, okay, who have it. And as we know, probably at least double that number should. And we hope they do, maybe with a private carrier. But look at long-term care insurance. Stan Hendon is the perfect example. Why, Stan, you were talking about your wife, Sarah.
Yes, she now resides in a group home because of her dementia and her Alzheimer's, and also the fact she has developed aphasia, which is an inability to speak properly. So she needs around-the-clock care, 24-hour care, which she's getting, and getting good care. But the fact that we have long-term care insurance has been very important. We pay about $4,000 a month for her facility, and that is covered to a large extent by the insurance payment that we have. And that's been a wonderful help and has avoided really depleting our assets in a very, you know, dramatic fashion.
Well, and that's very reasonable, too, isn't it, $4,000 a month?
Yes, compared to some of the other facilities, I find that some of the larger homes are charging between $8,000 and $12,000 a month, depending on the status of the patient. And that is, in many cases, it seems to me, confiscatory. So that is one reason that people need the long-term care insurance if they possibly can afford it. And even assisted living facilities charge $41,000 on the average in Montgomery County. So I would say that sometimes people will have to make sacrifices, and sometimes people will buy long-term care insurance and never use it. But I think it's worth having, particularly in this day and age when Alzheimer's disease has become almost an epidemic.
Yeah, and again, as I said, I say I hope every penny that I pay into the premiums is wasted, because that means I won't have needed it. But Paul, we got a comment from Contrarian, and he says, "What's so great about long-term care?" So they pay you to live in assisted living? Isn't that what your pensions and Social Security benefits are for? If your monthly income is $4,000, how much more than that is assisted living? Isn't nursing home covered by Medicare? In that case, why pay for long-term care for years? Why not just invest in the stock market and pay for assisted living out there? I can see you levitating off.
Well, Mike, there's so much wrong with that statement that I almost don't know where to begin, but let me try. First of all, I presume that the writer doesn't have a spouse living in the community, or a disabled child, say, who needs extensive care. Or a person who's gotten ill through an accident. You mentioned Christopher Reeve, and obviously Stan is in the community. So if you don't have that situation, I suppose it's a little different. But you ought to draw a distinction between what you need to live, what you need to, say, pay for an apartment, get basic transportation, food, and so forth, and what you will need for long-term care. They are separate expenses, and that's why long-term care insurance is not called disability insurance. Disability is that thing that you have during your working life which replaces your income if you cannot work any longer. A couple of other items. I think he said something about Medicare paying for assisted living. Medicare will not pay for assisted living. Assisted living is viewed as purely custodial. Medicare is, as you know, medically oriented, pays for skilled nursing care, rehabilitative care, care that you need when you're recovering from an acute condition. So it's not geared to that. As for the stock market, well, I've done a lot of numbers over many years. And I can tell you that it is very, very difficult to put aside, earmark the amount of money that you would need to cover a long-term care facility in the Washington, D.C. area, or even a group home like the one that Sarah is in. You have to literally, if you start in your 50s and you can, you're lucky enough to get 5 or 6%, you will have to be putting aside close to $1,000 every month until you hit age 80 for you to have enough money to manage. Now, that doesn't take into account the volatility of something like the stock market. Can you imagine if you had, you know, were invested heavily before the last serious drop in 2007-2008.
Or you put a couple hundred thousand dollars into Studebaker or something.
So this is one of those risks that really requires you to think hard about it. You ought to think about the advantages of transferring that risk to a third party. That third party doesn't necessarily have to be a private insurance company, but it makes sense to try to shift it off of your books onto the books of that well-heeled entity.
Right. Well, and Stan, feel free to jump in here, but also when we're talking about this, and I was saying that the long-term care insurance policy my mother took out turned out to be a gift to the, me and to the family because it did not strain our resources. We could give her the best, primarily using her money. There was some out-of-pocket for us, but it was minimal compared to what it would have been. But one idea about having long-term care insurance, I assume, is that it permits you, in many, many cases, to leave an estate.
I think that's true because it conserves your own assets. Otherwise, I think I'd be worrying about whether or not I'd have anything to leave to my children or whether I'd have any estate at all. I think it could all go if I was paying even the $4,000 a month without insurance, or certainly if I had to pay $8,000 or $10,000 a month. So I think that's been very – very fortunate that we took out that policy and that we've been able to. It the policy itself was not perfect, as I think you realize, because as a group policy, it didn't have all the bells and whistles that a commercial policy might have had. For instance, we don't have inflation protection. Many policies have a 5% annual inflation protection rider, and we don't have that. But even so, I think it was worth it. And we only were paying about, at the beginning, only about $2,000 a year for both of us for the policies. And that's very low compared to what individual policies cost these days.
Stan, if I may, you did buy pretty early. And there were some commercial underwriters who were issuing policies without inflation protection. Most have since that time decided that it was wise to do. By the way, a lot of group policies have inflation protection built in. They had it back then, and they do today. Certainly, the federal program offers you three different ways of doing it, 5%, 4%, or the future purchase option. But there's one thing I just wanted to add, and we were talking about why it's useful. It can also be useful at the time that you're scouting around trying to find a facility. A lot of facility managers worry about what is going to happen if they admit you and you can't continue to pay your bills. Then you may be a candidate for Medicaid, but Medicaid makes its reimbursements at a much lower level. So if they're going to accept you and you cannot demonstrate that you have the means, you present a higher risk to them. If you do go on Medicaid, even if you have the insurance in the beginning, at least they are getting paid a market rate in the early years, and it constitutes a kind of offset. So when you go looking, shopping around, and you wonder what kind of response you're getting, you're going to get, having private insurance is a whole lot better than going around not having it, unless, of course, you have that bank savings account documentation right there, and you can show them that you've got $1 million in cash.
Well, that's right. You need a minimum of $1 million. You were talking about in the D.C. area, $115,000 a year.
$115,000 in the D.C. area. The national average is closer to $87,000, but of course, as you know, D.C. is expensive.
Right. But those are staggering sums. I mean, at best, that's amazing.
The other problem involving not Medicare but Medicaid is that it's very difficult to get on Medicaid these days. Somebody has to spend down their assets to practically nothing in order to get approved, and you have to go have your finances vetted for a number of years, so that it's not a good idea if you need care for somebody to think, well, I can put that person on Medicaid, because it's not going to be that easy. You may be able to get it, but it's going to take a while, and it's very difficult to
We need to take a short navigate. Break here, but and I'll ask you about that. But getting on Medicare can be time-consuming, degrading, embarrassing, and you really have to be almost destitute.
Yeah, on Medicaid.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm sorry, Medicaid. Yeah, we'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, and we have an interesting lineup today. Stan Hendon, best-selling author of How to Retire Happy, The 12 Most Important Decisions You Must Make Before You Retire, and he is the first to admit that he didn't do some of those, but he learned from experience, his own experience. Also talking with Paul Fort, he is CEO of Long-Term Care Partners, which runs the federal program, has been now going into their 11th year. And if you're a federal employee or retiree, you can get long-term care insurance at a group rate. And that's very useful, particularly as you get older and less desirable to them. Stan, you were talking before the break about we were talking about Medicaid and the difficulties of it and the problems of it. And I think a lot of people, you sort of have to spend down to be at a certain level before you're eligible for
Medicaid.
Yes,
you do. And I'm sure that's very disconcerting for anybody who has to do that.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, there's as Paul pointed out, there's a five-year look-back clause, which means that if you've given any money away to your children or anybody else in the previous 5 years, that Medicaid is not going to, you know, permit you to get that help. And so they quite a bit of extensive research that they do into your finances. And then if you pass that test, you have to spend down to a certain level, which leaves you almost totally without assets. There are some extra regulations involving spouses who are well and in the community. But the whole process, I'm sure, is very difficult and, you know, not very ennobling.
Well, the other thing, too, I mean, in effect, you're saying I'm going into this institution, but I'm not coming out. I mean, that's quite psychologically what you're doing. Or if I do come out, I don't have anything to come out to.
Well, I think that's true, yes. I would think so.
Our producer, Lauren Larson, young, healthy, when her moped doesn't run into things. And she's, you know, well below 30. At what point should somebody start looking out, considering long-term care insurance, and if not for themselves, maybe their parents? Because I think I'm a belt and suspenders guy, yeah. And I think I got it when I was about 45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the average age, best age for somebody to consider long-term care insurance for themselves is probably around 55 or 60. For one thing, at that age, the rates are going to be considerably lower than they're going to be later on. So that's an advantage one could take care of. And if you've, you know, got the resources to do that, I think that's an excellent idea.
And long-term disability before that time, would that?
Well, Paul's better equipped to talk about disability, I think, than I, because that's a different kind of insurance.
That's to replace income.
Yeah. And that's why, and it's sort of analogous to life insurance if you think about it. You need life insurance if you are the principal breadwinner in the family or an important contributor to the family's regular income. If something happens to you so that you not there, you have to find a way, or you ought to plan a way to continue your income for a number of years. That's basically what life insurance does, and that's why it's often formulated as a multiple of salary. Disability is for people who become injured and are no longer able to do the job that they were trained to do, or perhaps are no longer able to do it well. Or comfortably, and it replaces your income. It's your ordinary living expenses. Once again, long-term care is that you pay for when you cannot actually do the most basic things for yourself, bathing, mm-hmm. dressing, changing your clothes, getting up and transferring from a bed to a chair, walking about the room to make yourself a cup of tea. That's what we're talking about. It's hands-on, it's verbal cueing, and it's expensive.
Right.
I'd like to ask Paul also if he'd comment on a thing that has bothered me for some years, which is that you can buy long-term care insurance, like most insurance, and you can pay for it for a very long time. And then, particularly if the company raises its rates, you might not be able to continue to pay for it. And in some cases, I believe you'd lose everything. I think there's been some amendments to that problem, but I think that if that's the case, one should check to see whether if they stop paying on their long-term care policies, whether they lose, you know, 10 years of payments or any number of years of payments.
Some insurance policies carry something called a contingent non-forfeiture, where if rates go above a certain level and you cannot make the payments, you are at least guaranteed some benefit. The federal program works that way. It's a problem, clearly. It's sort of analogous to what we were talking about earlier, where people pay in for many years and some don't want to do that because they feel they're not going to get anything out of the policy. There's no question that the rate increases of recent years have been tough for many people. The industry itself has gone through kind of a rough patch. A lot of insurers have raised rates due to changes in actuarial assumptions like mortality and morbidity and other things. And some of them, in fact, are not even offering riskier policy options that they used to, like unlimited benefits. So there is has been a little bit of contraction there. Some carriers have exited the market, and others are in it, but they've raised rates. It's unfortunate, Stan, that in those circumstances, a person who can't afford to pay may be forced to lapse. No insurer wants to see that happen, and so that's why we do things like help them with benefit reductions. Is there some way we can keep your policy in force by reducing the amount of coverage you have? In the federal program, as you know, we had a rate increase of anywhere between 5 to 25% back in 2010, and we allowed people to move from the 5% automatic compound inflation adjustment method down to 4%. As it turns out, the real rate of inflation has been closer to 4%. People who did that were happy enough because they reduced the from 5 to 4%, and they still had excellent coverage, and they didn't pay the increase. So that can be done, and many insurers are doing it. I think that anybody who buys long-term care insurance, however, needs to think, well, I'm buying this coverage today, and it's going to cost me, say, $1,800. Is it possible that the premiums will go up? The answer is yes. So therefore, you need to budget for it. You should not buy, you know, pay the $1,800 if you can barely make it and you see no relief in sight, because that would be unwise. You should think about whether you'd be able to afford that coverage if the premiums rose up over a period of 30 years by as much as 100%.
That's a good recommendation, I would say, yes.
I remember when that happened, when the premiums went up and there was a firestorm and it got into Congress and whatnot. But many people said they had been led to believe or told flat out that premiums would never go up, to which I would say, if anybody tells you that about anything, you know, it's like the income tax when it kicked in 1917, they said it'll never be over, what, 6%. Short break and we'll be right back here. Got some money questions for you, Paul. Be right back here on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're in the closing minutes here and having a fascinating discussion with Stan Hendon. He's a former colleague of mine at the Washington Post, writes a syndicated column about in the Retirement Journal column in the Post, and his book is called How to Retire Happy, The 12 Most Important Decisions You Must Make Before You Retire. It was on the New York Times and the Washington Post bestseller list. And if you look at today's Federal Report column on our federalnewsradio.com homepage, you'll see a link to it, and it tells you where to get it. And it's Stan is all over the internet these days. Also talking with Paul Fort, he's CEO of Long Term Care Partners. They run the federal long-term care health insurance program, have for the past 10 years, going into their 11th year. They have 275,000 members of the federal family who have bought this insurance, and Paul obviously thinks a lot more people than that should have it for reasons that we've discussed earlier in the show, and I hope if they don't have the federal plan that they have a good private sector plan. But, Paul, you were saying before the commercial.
Well, I just wanted to add one thing. You raised the subject of, you know, the rate increase and how some people thought it wasn't possible that it happened. And yet we certainly regret any failure of communications that there may have been. I can tell you that we never said the statute doesn't say, the regs don't say, and to my knowledge, no literature actually said that under no circumstances at all could rates ever go up. Anytime you're trying to you know, figure out the cost of an event that may be 15, 20, 25, 30 years into the future, it's very hard. Even the best actuaries have found this very challenging. In addition to morbidity and mortality assumptions and changing health care, you have things that no one has any control over, like serious recessions, like the action by the Federal Reserve, which has affected interest rates. So, you know, it's very difficult to do. The policy that we have, and many policies, are guaranteed renewable. That means that you have to be allowed to continue your coverage if you pay the premium, whatever the premium is. You do not have a guaranteed rate. And so anybody planning to buy private long-term care insurance needs to look at everything we've discussed and needs to be prepared for a rate increase of some kind at some point in the future.
Well, and common sense tells you, too, that, I mean, everybody knows medicine is getting better. People are living longer for a variety of reasons, including the anti-smoking campaign, which, you know, I've seen numbers as to how much that's costing us because people are living longer and using facilities. The medical inflation is doubled, sometimes triple, what the normal rate of inflation is. So that's that seems to me is a silly one. A switch to another subject. We live in a politically correct world. You know, all men and women are created equal. Everybody's the same. We're all in the same pool. Yet you hear about gender-based premiums and pricing and whatnot. What's that all about?
Well, it's very simple, Mike. For a long time, insurers have been watching experience accumulate, and the experience shows, and it will be no surprise to anyone listening, that women live longer than men do. And as a result, they pose a greater risk of needing long-term care due to frailty and other diseases that are associated with older age. For a very long time, men have had to pay additional premiums for life insurance. Why? Because mm-hmm. they don't live as long. They're a worse risk. So there's a definite correlation between the cost of insuring women and the cost of insuring men, and the insurers looking at all the assumptions. A number of them have decided that they are going to introduce gender-based pricing. Coming hard after some of these rate increases, it's not great news, but I think that the policies that do have it, that you will buy going forward, will probably have a more stable rating basis.
How about the government policy?
Well, you mean whether the government will introduce a program? This has been debated since the Pepper Commission mm-hmm. in the late 80s. And it's going on now with the new long-term care commission that has been created. It's very stimulating, very interesting. I don't think we're going to have a full-blown social insurance program anytime soon, given the government's fiscal difficulties and our desire to keep the economy moving forward. But I do think that it's not inconceivable that there could be some kind of catastrophic social insurance program introduced at some point in the future for those, say, who can't afford private long-term care insurance or can't pass underwriting.
Well, the whole thing is interesting. If you go into a nursing home, typically you will see a lot more women than men. I mean, it just happens. And I mentioned this to somebody one time, and they said, well, the men are at home being taken care of by their spouses
yes.
or sisters.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
another factor. But actuaries look at numbers, don't they?
Yes,
I mean,
they
I mean, if men have more accidents than women, they notice it. If teenagers have more accidents than 40-year-olds, they notice it. And it's not not an effort to discriminate or play favorites. They're just looking at the stats.
All insurance pricing is based on data. Your automobile, your homeowners, flood insurance, and so forth. It's all based on data. Long-term care insurance is no exception.
Stan, we've got about 2 minutes left. Can you cram some wisdom into 2 minutes?
Well, I'm not sure, but I can tell you about some of my experiences, particularly the experience of trying to find a facility for my wife, Sarah. Moving her out of our home to a nursing home environment, I must say, was one of the most traumatic decisions of my life. There are many places where you can get care. The problem is you don't really know how good the care is. And so you might, you know, take a tour of all of these facilities and homes, and you might see a lot of things, but there's hardly any yardstick to measure the kind of care you're going to get. In our case, we did visit a number of homes, and we finally figured out that one of the really good things we could do was to talk to the relatives of people who were in the home and who frequently visit, maybe as much as every day, and could tell us what they see, what they observe, and what they thought about the care. And when we reached the facility where we got excellent recommendations from the wife of one of the patients, who indeed was there every day, it gave us a lot more confidence.
That's brilliant
in choosing
and simple
the place
at the same time. And also, this is a gift to your spouse or your kids. If you provide them with long-term care insurance, then they can, as we did with my mother, move them into the best facility money can buy and not be strained. I want to thank you both, Paul Fort, Stan Hendon, for coming on today. This show is archived, so you can listen to it anytime. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Have a good week.
Thank you so much. We appreciate being here.
Thank you.